Hey, I'm Johanna Wagstaff.
And hi there, I'm Rohith Joseph.
And we're asking for 10 minutes of your day to go through the 10 things that the UN recommends we can all do when it comes to climate change.
Please don't leave.
No.
And also, the things aren't new.
We are just wired to not do them.
We promise you to help you figure out your brains, and you and your people can make better choices to combat climate change.
10 Minutes to Save the Planet is available now on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I'm just surprised they didn't fight harder to like maintain a relationship with me.
Yeah, so you kind of alluded to that last time, and maybe we can back up in the story, because the last time we talked about it at length, you were coming to the conclusion that you needed to set some boundaries with them, and I don't know what the right word is, like sever relationship, put a pause on relationship.
Yeah.
Set clear, firm boundaries.
So I wrote to them and, you know, basically said that I was concerned about what they had said. I don't feel like it's beneficial for my life any longer.
You don't think what's beneficial?
Our relationship and how that they are talking, not only to me, but how they talk to other people.
Hi, I'm Hillary McBride, and this is Other People's Problems. This is a real-life therapy session between me and a client that we're calling Ethan. If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you might recognize Ethan's voice from a previous season. But right now, Ethan's coming into therapy to work on some changes in the relationship he's having with his family of origin, his mom and dad. And over the last few years, some things have started to shift for them. They've gotten involved in some conspiracy theories that almost have a kind of cult-like quality to them. And this has put an increasing strain on his relationship with them. And he's at this point where he's making some hard decisions about what to do with this relationship to protect his immediate family now, his wife and his kids.
There have been times where my mom or dad has said something, and I've sat and stewed on it for a good week or two, and just like, how could they say such a horrible thing? Mm-hmm. Or how, you know, do they understand that, like, undertones of what they're saying here? Mm-hmm. And
it sounds almost incomprehensible, like.
Yeah, I mean, it causes a lot of mental processing that I just don't want to have any longer.
Right.
And so I responded to this, and their response back was just extreme. And I basically said, well, you just validated my point. And so, like, I don't think that we can continue to have a relationship any longer. And, like, my dad has been rational in the past with this. And so that's why, one of the reasons why I was so surprised with the response. And he never once picked up the phone and dealt with the situation.
Surprised because?
Because I would think that their relationship with their son was more important than enough to warrant, like, an actual phone conversation or video conversation rather than just doing this all over Telegram. You know, I don't want to engage in, like, this anger and frustration that they want to lob back and forth, and, like, this whole us versus them thing. And
yeah, you were, it sounds like, doing your part to not pour gasoline on the relational fire.
Yeah.
Yet I'm hearing this ache that you are not more important than this ideology.
Yeah.
That somehow they have gotten so wrapped up in this way of thinking and this paradigm that their relationship with their son even got eclipsed.
Yeah, and I know other people's experiences where they'd lost family members because of their beliefs, but I just never thought that they would be so ardent that we're willing to, like, risk losing our family members for this belief.
Wow.
Which, like, at this point, what is that anymore? You know, like, it's all pretty much crumbled and gone away, but yet there's been no course of action change or like any kind of change that they would want to come back and like talk any longer. And you guys have just taken this to the most extreme place possible. For what? You know, like I've had conversations with them in the past that's like, they're like, well, let's just have a relationship without politics and talking about money or this and that. It's like, great. Where do you want to start? And they just don't have anything else that they want to talk about. It's like, you have 3 grandchildren. Can you just be part of their life and like ask, be interested in them and ask us about what's going on in our life? But if it doesn't center around religion or politics or money, then it has no space for them.
What you're not hearing in this particular snippet of audio that I happen to know from working with Ethan is that some of the things that are showing up in the communication between him and his parents are these deeply racist and white supremacist beliefs and values and statements. And Ethan has worked so hard to be in relationship with them while also naming that it's not okay for them to believe or say those things, that they're hurtful and they're problematic. And what has really brought this to a head is that his parents have actually doubled down on their belief system, essentially severed the relationship and the kind of communication Ethan can have with his parents. And I think that there is a deep grief for him here, an anger even perhaps, that parents could choose something so outrageous as this, you know, set of beliefs instead of their own children.
And that's one of the things that I've been frustrated for a long time is you don't care enough about my life to go out of your way and interrupt your day. You know, like in the 10 years they've come to visit us maybe 4 or 5 times. And it always comes across as such a hardship for them. And yeah, it's a long drive and it costs money to like pay for gas and stuff like that. But
it makes you feel like what? That they don't do that?
Well, why is it that we can prioritize like saving the money and taking children like the 8-hour drive or whatever it is in the car to come visit them, but yet for the two of them it's such a hardship to be able to do this. It's like just use a little planning and forethought and come up with a plan to do it if you really want to like be a part of our lives. But it just that is like one little thing in the midst of many other examples where we don't fit into the box that they want.
Right. If I, again, like come back to this theme that I heard emerging earlier, these are my words. So you tell me if the words don't land for you, if there's some other better way of saying it, but it feels like there's an ache in there that says, like, can your son not be more important to you than your comforts, than your ideologies? Like, can I be valuable enough to you that you make an effort to be in relationship with me?
Yeah, totally.
And the ache of feeling like the answer to that has been no for so long.
Yeah, and so like...
Can you just let that land for a second? Because I'm really connecting with the grief of that. And I'm curious if it feels painful for you as we're talking about it.
It does. It feels painful, but it also isn't surprising because I guess it should be more surprising because part of the relationship that my dad had with his dad and my mom had with her parents was very similar in that they just called when it was convenient or didn't call at all and felt really like had a lifetime of guilt of not calling and not being a part of their lives, yet they would do nothing. So, and my dad has said, like, I just don't want to be like my dad this way, but yet he still continues to do it. And it just feels like a legacy of terrible behavior that has to end. And so, mm-hmm. yeah, I feel the grief for it, but I also feel the responsibility not to model that again.
Mm. To show up different for your kids?
Yeah, so that mm-hmm. I can be the fork in the road that takes a completely different path. I'm heartbroken and grieved that I can't have a relationship with my parents any longer, but it is for the best, you know?
Yeah, so I can sense as you're talking about it, the grief and the protection of yourself, the boundary setting coming from this place of really wanting things to be different.
Yeah.
In an experiential way, like right now when we just notice what's happening in your body, do you have a sense of being able to have access to both of those? Because I can hear you telling me about it, but I'm still wondering about, in a felt sense, what you can make contact with right now. Big sigh there.
Oh, I'm just thinking about like the different tricks that I would use to like make the relationship work and how it felt not manipulative, but like maybe I can make this work. And like hopeful in it, you know,
really trying the ways that you could
in a way that like guards me and boundaries me from some of the things that they say.
When I'm listening to him talk about this and I'm hearing him move towards the positive or find the silver lining, some might say, what I'm wanting to make sure is that if there's some pocket of grief inside, that it hasn't been missed. If there's some place inside that is begging to be asked about how much it hurts or what's unfinished, I don't want him to leave my office thinking that that didn't happen or that that part of him didn't get space to breathe in our work together. So I'll just rewind the tape of our session and our minds for a moment. I said, can you feel those in your body right now? The sense of, maybe we could even call it resilience, that felt sense of strength of wanting to change or the grief. And you told me a story about the strategies you tried to help them. And so I think that was really interesting information, but it made me wonder, like, is it hard to connect in with the feelings right now?
Yeah, I mean, it is, because I can reflect back on those and they are painful, but at the same time, there's been enough distance now in it where it's like, it's hard to want to rehash all of that and want to bring it all up. And mentally, I kind of just want to move on from it, you know?
What tells you that you're ready to move on?
Well, you know, like, as you know, that there's a lot of other stressors going on in my life, and I only have room for so much. Mm-hmm. And this one, because it's effectively ended in the, like, we're not going to talk to each other anymore, and we physically couldn't talk to each other, like, in person, even if we wanted to, that it's like, I can take that and set it aside and release my thoughts around that and focus in on something else going on in my life.
You're so right. There are so many other crises and things to give attention to.
Right.
So I'm appreciative of your way of caring of yourself by saying I only have so much space. What I'm wondering about is, does it feel done emotionally? I know you don't want to give it space for your thinking, and there isn't really anything you could change and think differently about it at this point. But
like,
is the pain
really
done?
Agonized over telling them that we couldn't like continue to have a relationship. But the minute I sent it and the minute that I got no response back, I was like, okay, this is done. But it also, there was a small part of me that like I keep coming back to, that like I kind of wish that they would have fought a little harder to like maintain our relationship. It is done, and I don't have to think about this anymore.
Yeah.
So.
And is that like relief?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it really is, because it's less people to have to worry or like think about or put energy into.
Right now, what you don't hear him talk about is that there's a medical crisis going on in his family. His wife is not well, and they're in the midst of trying to figure out what is happening for her and how to get her the treatment that she needs. So when I'm listening to Ethan talk about this, I'm also knowing this context that he's coming from. So it's almost as if he's saying, if there is more energy that I can put towards the things that are in crisis right in front of me, then that's more energy than I had previously when I was spending it trying to figure things out with my family. Having these no-go places in our life or having these severed bonds is painful. Like, it would be nice if you could have, it would be full or meaningful to have access to any relational space that you needed to have access to grieve, to be who you want to be in the world. And in these moments where there is something that is unhealthy, we have to prioritize somehow. And you have chosen your well-being and the well-being of your immediate family.
Yeah.
Recognizing that has consequences too. That means that there are parts of your life that you don't access freely anymore.
Yeah.
But as much as that hurts, I hear you say that it feels worth it.
Yeah, totally. Mm. There are so many moments in my family's life right now that are so important, especially in my kids' lives, that just outweigh all the rest of it. And that's what's really important. And the people that are a part of their life and a part of our lives have that same joy and love, and they bring a lot to the relationship that my kids and my family feel really loved and taken care of. And that's what's really important. I don't have to worry about like being manipulated or attacked or run down or like, it's just, it is emotionally and physically safe, you know?
Yeah. Which feels like what? So you don't have to worry about those things, but what do you feel?
It's hard to say what safe feels like. Yeah,
I know.
It
acts as such a helpful shorthand.
It really does.
I wonder for you.
That feeling of fight or flight.
Okay.
I don't have that.
So
in these situations,
your body doesn't feel in danger. You don't have to worry about hypervigilance. You don't have to wonder what's the other agenda. So there's like worry.
In the past, I've been at my parents' house and specifically looked for reasons to leave, to go do something because I didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Because it just felt really toxic.
Right.
And so I don't have that.
Right. And that feels like what? Ease?
Yeah.
Calm? Settled in your body? Mm-hmm.
I think be more present.
There it is. Yeah, present. Yeah, your attention can be on what's happening, not what thing is happening behind the scenes, or how do I get out of this? And what a thing to notice that you can be present.
Yeah. That stillness is really, like, in stillness, you feel that in your body, but also, like, mentally, when you're just able to just turn everything off and focus in on like what's really important. I feel like the more a situation's unsafe, the noisier your brain gets in terms of like trying to process it all and handle it all. Mm-hmm. And that just feels really taxing.
And you mentioned, I think this is an important piece to keep naming, it is taxing and you've tried to change it. And you've asked for things to be different, and you've tried that over a long period of time, and it hasn't changed.
Yeah. And
it got worse.
I can imagine times where, or not imagine times, there have been times where my mom or dad has messaged me something, and I would get so angry about it that I was like, wanted to throw my phone or like break something, and it would just last for days because it's like, why are you treating me this way? Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's really good.
I anticipate that one of the next times that Ethan and I talk about his family, it will be because perhaps there is a loss or an illness with one of his parents, and that puts him in tension with the boundary that he set with them. I could also imagine that there will be something that emerges as there's more and more and more space between him and his parents, and he can encounter that felt sense of rejection, you know, that his parents have chosen this worldview and belief system over relationship with him as their son. There might be more space just for him in his own life, in our work together, to feel into what this all was like. Of course, I don't know what's going to happen next, and I really want to honor and privilege Ethan's decision, his wisdom about what he needs right now, what feels right for him in terms of where he wants to spend his energy. But I am curious, with this magnitude of loss and how much he struggled to make this choice, how and when it will show up again in our work. I'm Hillary McBride. Other People's Problems is produced and edited by Jody Martinson. Mixed and music by Lee Rosevere. Fabiola Carletti is our digital producer. Arif Nirani is the executive producer of CBC Podcasts.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.